gave 150 million Doritos to what? I don't... Clearly, Google Translate is broken.
A lot more structure, I would say, to the way the Blue Jays operate now as opposed to when Alex was in charge.
And welcome to episode number 38 of Artificial Turf Wars, where we've spent the last 2 weeks trying to accurately count the number of stitches on the ball. I'm your host, Greg Wisniewski, and I am joined tonight by Josh Housam. Joshua, how are you?
I'm good. You?
I'm good. And I have here in front of me a list of names of people who are not Toronto Blue Jays. I'm not even going to run down the list. This is essentially our podcast first half is, hey, we really like the idea of him being a Blue Jay, but he's not a Blue Jay anymore. If I've spoiled the surprise there. Because Blue Jays themselves don't seem to have done very much. But we do have an interview after that with Shai Davidi. He's going to talk to us about the upcoming winter meetings and some thoughts. Now, that was recorded just before the new collective bargaining agreement was finalized. So there's some things in that interview, and then we're gonna talk about what we know now as opposed to what we knew then. And we will, of course, take your listener questions because we appreciate you contributing those every week. A whole lot of theoretical questions, of course, because the Blue Jays keep not doing things. Let us begin with the one that got away, perhaps, that we know got away, Brett Cecil, a quiet legend in Blue Jays history.
Yeah.
Is now going to wear red.
Yes. The Cardinals gave him a 4-year, $30.5 million deal, which, you know, good for Cecil, obviously, right? That might come as a surprise to some people. A lot of relievers don't get 4-year deals, but he basically got the Darren O'Day contract that he got with Baltimore last year as an elite setup man, which, despite what people in Toronto think, he has been for the last 4 years.
Yeah. Most relievers have a certain amount of fluctuation in their success rate because there's so few innings for them to be, you know, perfect in that, it, you know, a bad two weeks can make them look horrible over the course of a season. And then you look back at it and you're like, oh, there was only really two bad weeks, but his ERA is over 4 for some reason because those 2 weeks were really bad. And then turn around, Cecil, while he was here, threw a hidden no-hitter, which I think people forget. He also, what was the record he set for scoreless?
I think it was 37 consecutive.
Yeah.
I think that's what it was.
Scoreless innings.
Yep.
So really some remarkable things, but because the failures of a reliever get magnified and he was not a closer, so you couldn't point at his saves totals. I think, yeah, he did get a bit of a short shrift from the casual fan, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to happen too, especially for if you are a short reliever and you blow some leads, fans are just going to, you know, they're going to not like you. It's just the nature of the beast of being a short reliever.
Yeah, that's regardless of the city.
Yeah, and it's just the way it was. But I mean, over the last 4 years, he had an ERA of 2.9.
I'm on your side. I'm going to miss the curveball, man.
Oh, yeah. At least he went to the National League, though, so he won't be getting our guys out.
That is always a bonus when someone leaves and they don't end up in the division as a free agent. That's always just like, oh, come on, really? The whole A.J. Burnett to the Yankees thing was like, come on. Do we have to go through this?
Yeah. That wasn't good. But thankfully, it did not happen with Cecil.
So name number two is Edwin Encarnacion, who, I mean, we've been pretty much resigned to the fact since the Kendrys Morales signing, not going to be a Blue Jay. The latest and greatest is what destination for Edwin? Because, you know, it changes every 5 minutes what the terms and location are.
Yeah, I mean, well, there were all these rumors at the beginning of the offseason he was definitely going to Boston, even though what we said on this podcast, that didn't make a whole lot of sense given their roster makeup. But now all day today, this is Wednesday, it's basically been like he's going to Houston. And now there's a new report. He's agreed to a 5-year, $115 million deal. But it's not coming from anybody that normally reports these kind of things. So
yeah. Would you like me to read the tweet?
Go for it.
Fuente. Edwin Encarnacion podría firmar con los Astros de Houston. Se habla de un contrato multianual de 5 años y US, I don't know how to say 115 in Spanish, millones. That's from Hector Gomez, who maybe he's got the inside line because he's with the Spanish language media. I don't know why he got that first, but sure. I'll believe it. I haven't even translated it. Could mean anything. He gave 150 million Doritos to what? I don't. Clearly, Google Translate is broken.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Houston is not an unreasonable destination from what people have been telling me.
No, I mean, they always have been talking about, you know, making noise in this offseason. And there was this idea that they were going to load up on hitters and then trade some of their young bats for pitching because there's no pitching on this free agency. And so they've already added Brian McCann. They've added Josh Reddick. And now it's possible, potentially, Edwin Encarnacion. We don't really know yet, but it would make sense.
Now, McCann was a trade?
Yes. Yeah, he was picked up because the Yankees have Gary Sanchez. So right, they're going to get rid of McCann.
Reddick was a free agent.
Yep.
So whatever way they can, they're going to load up. Not that they were bad last year. But
no, no, but just this idea that if they get all these bats, they can trade one of their young hitters like the Alex Bregman or maybe Springer. George Springer or something like that, which we actually have a question about that later. But, you know, and then go get pitching because there's just no pitching on this market.
It sounds like the Houston Astros are a much more exciting team than the one we're podcasting about. Can we switch next week? No, you're not allowed to do that. Okay. Name number three, in no particular order of my names, Matt Joyce, former Ray. What was it? Was he most recently a Ray, or did he get moved around somewhere?
I think he's with Pittsburgh.
Maybe.
Yes. Probably. I think he was a Pirate last year. I mean, we're going to go through this pretty quickly, but just these guys that were like, oh, the Jays could get this guy, could get the guy. Well, he signed with Oakland, so he's not coming.
Okay. And then Nori Aoki looked like maybe a non-tender candidate.
Yeah, this sort of fit with the Houston thing where they just, you know, they picked up Josh Reddick and there's nowhere really for him to play because we talked about Lourdes Gurriel's brother, Ulieski, is in Houston. He's going to play the other outfield spot with Springer, but... they avoid arbitration $5.5 million. So nope, he's not coming either.
Well, that was I don't even think it was a lot of people's pipe dream, but if it was, sorry, hate to disappoint. I guess that the dream is dead.
Yeah. I didn't want him. I didn't want Josh Reddick. I don't want any of these. Joyce would have been interesting because he actually legitimately is a good platoon bat. But I don't want these guys that are going to cost money that aren't stars.
Are we leading into the next guy you don't want?
Yeah, we are.
You got ahead of yourself, maybe. The name that will not die, Jay Bruce.
Yeah, I think we need to spend some time on this one. I mean, when was the first time we heard Jay Bruce of the Blue Jays? Was it 2 years ago? Was it 3 years ago?
I believe that, I became aware of it 2 years ago, but it probably was three because I like to ignore trade rumors because so few of them actually come to pan out. The whole Michael Saunders thing. Was he not already traded here? Really?
Yeah, that was last year at the beginning of the season. Saunders was traded for Bruce.
And then suddenly he wasn't.
Yeah. So, this is the rumor that won't die. But Bruce is not very good. That's the problem.
That's why he could be traded for Michael Saunders. Presumably.
Yeah, exactly. And here's the thing with Bruce. Like, if Bruce wasn't making $13 million, he'd be useful. You know, it's like a platoon bat. He hits righties very well, but he can't play defense and he can't hit lefties at all. So it's like, it's not really worth $13 million and assets to trade for him.
No, it's throwing good money after a problem and getting yourself a problem back. And of all the things, the Blue Jays, Kevin Pillar only has so much range.
Well, I mean, this is interesting because they just re-signed Yoenis Cespedes for 4 years, $110 million. So they have to cut somebody from their outfield because they've got too many guys right now.
So you pick the 36-year-old Curtis Granderson as the first guy you want to get rid of, I assume, due to age and declining skill set.
Well, I don't even know if that's that they would choose to trade him more. I just think he's more desirable, actually, because his skills actually aren't declining that much, and he can still play the outfield. He just can't play center anymore.
Now, I heard something about Granderson not necessarily wanting to move. Does he have an... I don't remember if he has a no trade or not.
I'm not sure, actually.
That would be a downside, of course.
Yes. You know, no trade clauses tend to make it a little more difficult. Looking, it doesn't look like he has one.
Okay. Well, then we're good. And he's not a 5-10 with the Mets.
Nope.
That's only like 3 years he's been there, I think.
Yeah, and he's on the last year of a 4-year deal, so it makes sense for a short-term acquisition.
All right, Grandy Man. Okay, he's not the highlight. He's not the top guy. As we discussed with Shy, the guy who... The name that won't go away for everybody is Dexter Fowler. Do you think the Jays are really in there?
Hey, Fowler would be perfect. I think we both agree on that, right? I mean, he's a switch hitter. He gets on base a lot. And he's a good outfielder, good speed, good batting average, decent pop. I mean, he's exactly what this team needs at the top of their lineup.
And like we've mentioned, and a whole bunch of other people need him too, which is why.
And just now it's just like, oh, the Jays love Fowler, come from John Heyman. It's like, well, of course they love Fowler. Everybody loves Fowler.
I don't understand. I understand it because it's just sort of convention, but the sort of love life / dating language that pops up around free agency is always the Blue Jays are interested in. The Blue Jays love, they've reached out. It's like, what? They would like to pay him money to play baseball. That is what they have told. It's not. This is not a love affair.
Could be, Greg.
Yeah, it could be. Beautiful. They're a good match. Can you imagine a job interview, you know, where you were trying to say, we think you're a good match. We really love you. I don't know. It's a strange business because there's only so many.
You know
people
what? If someone offered me the kind of contract money that Dexter Fowler's going to get, they can say whatever they want.
So I would assume that Fowler is. Well, obviously, we're all thinking Encarnacion, because of all the rumors, is going to go first. Where do you think Fowler goes? Does he hang around for a bit just to see some team is really out of other options and decides to pony up for him, or does he jump as soon as somebody hits his magic number?
It's kind of tough to say. I mean, the Cubs were obviously thought to be a suitor for him, but they just signed John Jay for 1 year, $8 million. They've got too many outfielders now as well. So, I mean, the Cardinals obviously would want him. I mean, a bunch of teams would want him, but it's really hard to predict where his market's going to go.
I think maybe some teams are planning on just using a rover this year.
I can't remember who it was. Someone tweeted this out. It was pretty funny. It was like the Jays should trade for Billy Hamilton.
Yeah.
And then just play Pilar and Hamilton in the outfield on days when Stroman and Sanchez are pitching and play 5 infielders.
Yeah. I mean, this game needs a little shaken up. That's what they've told us for ages. Why not just 2 outfielders? How bad could it be? I mean, you got a lot of spray charts, right? I mean, what's the occasional inside the park home run balanced against all those extra outs on the ground?
It reminds me of that play, I think it was 2 years ago, where the Dodgers had 4 infielders on the right side of the field.
Yeah, like the pictures of that were just like, what? Did someone duplicate somebody in Photoshop? Is that what's going on? No.
And it worked.
Yeah. Well, it only needs to work once to be an okay strategy when it's, you know, extra innings and infielders everywhere.
It was really fun, too, because it worked. So there was 1 out, and they got the out of the plate, and then they went back to normal defense, and then a hit won the game.
I just remember the last time the Blue Jays went against the Angels and had the extra infielders, and it was hit at the outfielder playing the infield, and they won on that play. And it's like, always, if you're gonna hit it on the ground, hit it to the outfielder, because what is he gonna do anyway? Okay, is that a series?
Little off
of
the rails?
Yeah, I think we've kind of that was my last name on my list. Is there somebody who you would like to mention before we go talk to our interview?
Well, we're going to get some questions about this, but obviously the big name that has come up that is out there, and apparently the Pirates are shopping Andrew McCutchen, which, I mean, that makes sense from one standpoint, and then he had a down year. They're probably not going to win this year, and he's coming up on free agency in 2 years, so get what they can now, but, I mean, that's a big name.
Oh, huge. But the sell low aspect of it always just makes me scratch my head. You've got one more year to see what you've... I mean, do you really think he's going to be worse than last year? And you can still get a full year out of him.
I think the argument there is that, you know, if they sell him in a year, you're only getting 1 year of Andrew McCutchen. Whereas now they can play like, oh, you know, he had a great end of the season, August and September. He was hurt earlier in the year. He's better now. You're getting 2 years of an MVP.
How many nickels do I get for every time someone says he had a great September?
Yeah, I said August and September.
Oh, yes, August, yes. Critical month.
When it comes to a guy, a star player who was having a down season, when he starts producing again, it does tend to wake people up. It's like what we were doing with Troy Tulowitzki last year.
Who has been, over the past two seasons, an exactly average hitter at his position, which is ironic. But we'll get into that some other day. We will come back in just a few seconds and talk to Shai Davidi of Sportsnet about all the goings on in the offseason so far. See you in a sec.
And some of these names we talked about will actually come up again.
We are joined once again by Shai Davidi of Sportsnet. Nice to talk to you again, Shai. How is it going out there on the highway?
It's all good. Nice traffic-free night, which is always a pleasant thing in the city of Toronto. So no complaints right now.
I think we just proved that Shai's not actually in Toronto because there's no way that's true.
Yeah, this alternate universe bizarro Toronto. Yeah.
North Toronto, we're a little bit clearer than downtown.
So this has been a big week for sort of rumor in the baseball world, if not a lot of happenings, because there is this whole new collective bargaining agreement or CBA negotiation going on. And just before we started recording this, the latest thing that came out, I guess we could start with, is Ken Rosenthal has tweeted that the owners have backed away from requiring an international draft as one of their bargaining points. So what does that say to you, watching the CBA?
Well, what it says is that the players must have surrendered some other give back in order to get the owners to drop this. Because this is something Rob Manfred in particular seems to be set on. As a way to more evenly distribute the talent that's around the world, and without, understandably so, you can see why owners are maybe not so thrilled with some of the posting fee systems to get players out of Asia, the way that really precludes some of the smaller market clubs from competing from those players. It's really as all these different restraints have been put into various player procurement processes. This is one area where rich teams can still, on a consistent basis, beat the smaller clubs. So the fact that the owners apparently are backing away from it is a very significant concession. And so I'm curious to see what the give back on the player side was in order to get the owners to drop that.
Were you surprised that the players fought so hard for this, given how little the attention they paid to amateurs in the past?
Well, yes and no. So, in general, players are more concerned about the money being allocated to big league players as opposed to being spent on these kids who are unproven, right? So the fact that they would fight tooth and nail against it is a bit counterintuitive, because if they're limiting the money that's going to those players, then that should, in theory, mean more money being directed to big league rosters. Now, the counter to that is that just because owners are saving that money, it doesn't necessarily mean they're going to put the money into their big league player payroll. You know, see what teams who have been tanking in recent years have been doing. The Marlins in general, when they're in their usual cut costs, don't spend kind of cycles. So, that's the player point of view, is they want as few restraints, artificial restraints on player salary as possible. So hence the reason that they would fight so so vehemently against it, even though it does seem a little bit counterintuitive because, again, in theory, it should be more money on being spent on big league rosters.
Because in baseball, unlike other sports, there's nothing in the agreement right now about what percentage of revenue goes to the, you know, back to the owner's pocket and what percentage goes to the players, which, despite all of the money that we see thrown around in baseball, the percentage actually is skewed in the owner's favor in baseball still.
Well, I think it depends on the reporting.
That number's debated. Yeah, that number's been debated a lot of times, too, but I think the general consensus is in the 47-48% range to players, I think 52-53 in favor of owners. And obviously, every sport works in different ways to try and divide the pie. I think one of the reasons that owners have, in the last decade and a half or so, backed away from the demand, the long-standing demand or goal of the salary cap is because that share seems to be favoring them a little bit. Now, you know, does that change? How does that ultimately sit? You know, again, it's very difficult to say because I think there's all kinds of ways for teams and individual ownerships to hide money or to manipulate various process. So, you know, never take anything at face value. But really what's happened over the past decade and a half is a lot of people, players and owners, have gotten very rich, made a lot of money. And so that's because everything's been so plentiful and it's been such a largely prosperous time in the game. I've had trouble believing that all the lockout talk in the last couple of weeks has been anything more than, you know, a commissioner and a players union had negotiating a CBA with one another for the first time, trying to make sure that they appear tough to their constituents.
Yeah, and then given that, do you sense that, you know, any of this talk about how the CBA, lack of a CBA, is slowing the offseason, do you feel that that's actually the case, or is that, or are the GMs and owners sort of have an idea what it's going to be and it's just slow because it's slow?
You know what? It's interesting. I've talked to a lot of agents, and the agents, particularly for those representing sort of the bigger name clients, legitimately feel that's a factor. And I think one factor for all the qualified free agents is that if the new CBA does end up eliminating the compensation for free agents, compensatory draft picks, that's going to change the game for the 16 or 17 qualified free agents and open up a host of possibilities for them. So I think that a lot of teams are legitimately taking a wait-and-see approach, and that we may see some more aggressive bidding for certain players if that does indeed come to pass. And I think that there is, I mean, Dave Dombrowski, you know, was one of the GMs who out and out said that, you know, they were going to back away until they found out what the luxury tax threshold was, and that would impact their plans. And, you know, I imagine teams like Texas and Anaheim and all the other clubs that are in and around the cap, the Yankees, are going to change their plans based on where that final number does end up. So I don't think that – I think that's legitimate. I think that's one part of it. And I think because there's been so little action on the bigger names, the middle tier has been far busier. But some of the middle tier guys want to wait and see what the big boys get before they end up committing themselves.
So here we are, just a few days before the big winter meetings, as they say. Now, this gets bumped up as having, you know, all of the action over the winter. I think maybe sometimes it gets overstated. But so where are the winter meetings this year? I guess for those who don't know, are they somewhere luxurious?
No, they're in Washington, D.C., of all places. So it's not tropical at all. I don't think people are as excited about this one as or last year was Nashville. And that one's not such a popular site either, but at least it's pleasant outside. Not exotic or anything fun like that.
So for you guys reporting on it, It's a, you know, a 24-hour, you can't blink or you'll miss it, because we get a lot of those jokes sort of on Twitter that, you know, Ken Rosenthal becomes a vampire zombie or something for several days. But do you think a lot of business is in a typical year really done there, or is it just a time when people get to talk about it because it's everybody's in one spot?
Well, it depends. You know, like, when was it? I think it's two winter meetings ago in San Diego. There was, you know, a total turnover all across the game. Free agents. There was, like, the bevy of trades. The Dodgers turned their roster over spectacularly. San Diego made a bunch of moves. There was a lot of action. And then you have some more quiet years. Like, last year, Nashville was relatively quiet. So it depends on the pace of the offseason. I think because of the delay this year and that so much has yet to be done, and my guess is that we'll get a CBA announcement, news conference on the first day of the winter meetings, and then we'll see the dam open up and a bunch of things go down. I think this year is going to be spectacularly busy. Well, at least I'm hoping so, because that'll make the 4.5 days in the lobby there at the hotel a lot more exciting.
Well, otherwise you get to just be really social. It just
has to be the
lobby.
Like, it's not like it's an actual room or a conference place or something where they're doing just hang out in the lobby and hope that something drifts by.
Well, it was basically what it is. You're just kind of stalking people. I think it's different now, right? Like, back in the day, before everybody had a smartphone and all that stuff, like, basically you just had to hunt for people, and then you'd meet your sources, and you know, when they can't come out of their rooms or their war rooms for some air, and you know, you'd ferret out some nuggets, and then you go, you know, do your thing. These days it's a little bit easier. You know, you can communicate people with smartphones. You know, there's scheduled media avails with every team does with their GM. So it's certainly a bit more organized, but you still, nothing beats, in my opinion, face-to-face contact, because, you know, you can see the person. So if you're, you know, you want to talk with an agent and you have a conversation with them, you can read their face and get a bit more. And because you're having a real interpersonal connection, you may get a bit more information out of someone that way.
Yeah, that makes sense. But, you know, and now that with all this stuff that needs to happen, just take this a little more specific to our listeners and the Jays. You wrote a piece that came out today. This is Monday. With just sort of a Jays FAQ, FAQ. And you mentioned at one point that the Jays seem to be in a wait and see mode, debating between going high end for a guy like Fowler or spreading it for a bunch of lower guys. How is it that a team could be at this point in the offseason and not really know the answer to that yet?
Well, sometimes you may have your preferred option, and you know, you have to wait for your preferred option to make the decision. And I don't know for a fact that Dexter Fowler is their preferred option, but I do believe that they're quite fond of him, and they feel that in a lot of ways he's sort of a perfect fit for them. Switch hitter, high on base, bring some speed. My understanding is that he's willing to come off center. He'd probably be a plus defender in one of the corners. There's a lot to that package that really makes sense. He fits a lot of needs, checks a lot of boxes for the Blue Jays. Now, he checks a lot of boxes for a lot of teams. And, you know, I'm just spitballing here, but a team like the Cardinals, a team like the Giants, I mean, they could be all over him. And at that point, you know, the decision is his. You know, you can try to force the issue, but ultimately you can't force them to sign here. So the Blue Jays may be waiting on something like that. Again, that's speculation on my part, not facts. But if they're waiting for someone like that, or they're waiting for a domino to fall, and then they need that to happen in order to execute their plan, that would explain what's going on right now. But to me, in a lot of ways, the key for them was getting Morales when they couldn't get Edwin Encarnacion locked up early at the GM meetings. You know, at that point, they felt they had to get at least one potential middle of the order type of bat. And Morales was the guy that they preferred because a switch hitter, he's not Edwin Encarnacion or Jose Bautista, but he can certainly do some damage in the middle of that lineup. And once they had that piece, that gave them the opportunity to kind of wait out some of the other options, knowing that they already had that element in hand.
Yeah, that certainly makes sense. And just quickly, now the sense you're getting is that they would be willing to give up a draft pick to sign a qualified guy like Fowler or Cespedes or whatever, but that they would actually be willing to do it?
Yeah, I don't think Cespedes is on the table for
that.
Yeah,
I was just speaking generally.
But I believe so. Because I think if you they're looking at the window of opportunity that they have, right? That if you get the right player, you can really make the next 2 years. You can give the next 2 years a good boost. And if you're giving the next 2 years a good boost and you're getting a player who maybe even has some value at the tail end of the contract that maybe you can trade for prospects or something if you have to go through a rebuild or a retool or something along those lines, I think that makes sense because they do need some now pieces. And then you factor in that they're looking at the potential of getting two compensatory picks for Encarnacion and Batista, that, you know, if you still have two picks in what's essentially the first round, you know, you're not really killing yourself on that front.
So as we go forward, and you're talking about, you know, looking a year, 2 years out and whether or not you're going to be competitive or not, it comes up a lot. How much is this team going to spend now, and then how much does this team have going forward? And that number seems to be creeping up. Obviously, there's a floor to it now with all the contracts you have in Tulo and Martin, etc. But where do we get that? You used it in your piece today, that $160 million figure. Where is that exactly coming from, just so our listeners have an idea?
Well, I don't know the definitive number. But my understanding is the payroll number is going up. And the payroll in 2016 was roughly $152 million, something in that area, maybe a couple mil off here and there. These are all based on kind of my calculations. I haven't gotten anything official. But as I understand it, that's the general range. And so I'm just kind of thinking you're getting some sort of bump, and it has to be a reasonable bump. So I think expecting them to be in the 160 range, maybe, I don't know, 157, 158, maybe it's 160, I don't know. I think that's a reasonable area to ballpark it.
And so basically you would be surprised if it's a little lower, even higher?
I'll tick lower, I'll tick higher, and I imagine that there probably is some flexibility from a Blue Jays perspective that, you know, if they had an opportunity for the right player, they could revisit it with ownership. I think the relationship that exists now with Mark Shapiro and ownership is such that, you know, there's enough trust in the way that he handles the team that he could, if the right opportunity comes up, maybe go back and get some more. But I'm not sure that opportunity is going to present itself for them right now. I think they've got enough money to address their needs. The question is, how are they going to allocate it?
Fair. So we back to the winter meetings, just sort of as a lead in here. You watched Alex Anthopoulos in action for a couple of years, and he was known as a guy who would apparently just be phoning people relentlessly through the middle of the night if he thought it would change things. Obviously, nobody's quite like Alex, just because everybody has a different personality. From what you know about Shapiro and Atkins, where do you see them sort of, or how do you see them operating? Or are you interested to see how different it is at this meeting?
Well, this is going to be the first winter meetings that we see Ross Atkins in action, right? Because if you remember, the way it went down last year is that he had just been hired before the winter meetings, and since he was just parachuting into the situation, it was Tony LaCava was still the point man with Mark Shapiro running things. So we're going to find out. You know, my understanding is that he was very dogged, and Atkins was very dogged and tenacious during the trade deadline. They're very thorough. They're very organized as a front office. They're certainly a lot more structure, I would say, to the way the Blue Jays operate now as opposed to when Alex was in charge. And that's not a criticism of Alex by any means. It's just a different mode of operation. So it's going to be interesting to watch. And, you know, we're learning about this regime as it goes along. And, you know, a lot of people were suspicious of them last year because of the circumstances of the way they took over. You know, I think that what we've seen is that their responsible and conservative, but they're still looking to push all the way as much as they can. You saw that with the Liriano deal. They didn't want to spend a lot of their prospect capital. They didn't. What they really did is they used actual capital to get a player, and they picked up a couple prospects for their farm system as well. And we could see the Blue Jays looking to do something like that again this winter. I would not be surprised if they make a trade. It's that sort of deal where they take money and give up a secondary type of prospect or someone, a fringe kind of guy. So we're going to find out. And, some of the – look, a lot of people are still on the fence about this front office, but we're going to really get a sense of where they are and how they want to keep this thing going over the next few weeks and perhaps months.
Well, they do certainly seem to be aware of how they want to run a baseball team. It's, some front offices you get a lot of mixed messages from, and they seem to be pretty on point. So it will be interesting to see what direction they're going, because they do seem, to my mind anyway, organized about the whole thing. In that light, of course, if people want to follow you at the winter meetings, where is the best places to follow you other than Sportsnet itself? Your Twitter?
Off the sportsnet.ca, definitely Twitter, SHIDAVIDI. We're going to have a lot of coverage at Sportsnet, the winter meetings. Ben Nicholson-Smith's going, Jeff Blair's going, Mike Wilner's going, Hazel May's going. So we're going to have a pretty big team there, and there'll be a lot of coverage on TV, radio, and the web as well.
So, yeah, it's the great little winter baseball carnival, as it were, and we hope to hear lots from you, and we do appreciate you joining us in advance of it. I hope that there are winter meetings and that these rumors that they may be delayed is all just smoke and mirrors, right?
Yeah, we think we're all hoping for that. Nobody wants to see a labor stoppage, and my guess is that it won't get there. I don't think that they're facing, my understanding is the sides aren't facing such a gap in issues that it would that they would put it off. But hey, we've seen owners and players get into big fights over less, so never take anything for granted.
Yeah, I think we all learned that in election season. And that's as political as I'm going to get for one night. Thanks again for dropping by, Shai.
Thanks for having me, guys. Take care.
Bye-bye. Back. Always good time to talk to Shai, and I hope he's stoked, because we've learned that there will be winter meetings since we recorded that, because as Shai predicted in the interview, it looks like we're gonna have that day one press conference. Hey, we got it all figured out, right?
Well, actually probably before that, because winter meetings don't start till Monday and they finished it today.
The Friday morning press conference, but he was pretty close.
He was close.
So we have the Jeff Passan. Should I read Jeff's tweet? I suppose
go for it.
It's accurate. Well, I suppose accurate. It's a nice way of putting it. The new CBA's effects. The winter meetings are on. The Yankees and Red Sox are back in business, and baseball gets 5 uninterrupted years. So he is referring, of course, to the rising luxury tax threshold, I presume, which really isn't rising that much when you consider how much the qualifying offer was rising over that period of time. It's going to be $210 million by the end of the CBA.
Only $195 million this year.
Yeah, which is up from $189. So, I mean, $6 million? It's like one dude.
Yeah, not even a good one.
No, it's like it's a raise for one guy. It's not even a whole guy.
And it's, obviously they could, that does allow them to say be backload deals. It's like, okay, well, if Edwin and Encarnacion, we're going to give you $6 million in year one, but we'll give you $35 million in year two.
Yeah. So, we also have, we'll get this breaking Edwin Encarnacion news out of the way. would you like to read this one?
Okay, I was going to go into more of what the CBA is actually
saying.
Yeah,
we'll come back to the CBA for sure, but I feel it's like breaking news right now because we just got this news about Edwin Encarnacion.
Okay, so this came from Antonio Puesan. He's a baseball writer and analyst for ESPN Deportes 1050. Fuentes informan que Edwin Encarnacion llegó a un acuerdo con los Astros por 5 años y $115 million. So it seems to be...
I'm sensing a theme. We don't know. I refuse to use Google Translate, except when someone announces it in English, we are going to translate it into Spanish, and we're going to read it on the podcast. And you folks can critique the Google Translate grammar from there. Okay, back to the CBA. What have we got? We got a luxury tax change. We have some kind of change in the free agent compensation, as was expected.
Yeah, this one's bizarre, though. So we don't really know exactly what it is, but it sounds like free agent compensation is only going to be paid by teams that sign someone when they're over the luxury tax. So basically nobody. And they're not giving up a first round pick. Now, what's particularly interesting about that is no one has said whether that applies now.
Current
free agents. Yeah. As opposed to going into effect next offseason. Because if it does, how angry will Jeremy Hellickson be and Scott Boras?
Well, but Scott Boras is perpetually angry when the CBA gets changed.
Yeah, but this time he would actually have cause.
Maybe they felt like, you know, if they were going to have to hear from him, he should legitimately. Every time they come to an agreement in the middle of the offseason, like this happened 5 years ago and there were some changes and there was a lot of, you know, I think it was Papelbon, wasn't it? Someone got signed very early in the season and the question was, did the Nats make a mistake or did the Phillies make a mistake? Because now that the whole compensation structure has changed, now that the CBA has been signed. I don't remember all the details. I probably should have looked that up. But hey, I didn't even know the CBA was going to be signed tonight. So that's my out.
Yeah, but it's just interesting that because they have this thing where they had to accept this qualifying offer or not within 7 days, but no idea what it was going to mean in 2 months. Like Jeremy Hellickson, there's no way he takes that qualifying offer if he doesn't have draft pick compensation tied to him.
Right, because he can get a much better contract with no real compensation tied to him. But leave it to baseball.
So that's why I can't see any way that this can logically apply right now.
So you're thinking next offseason is when this kicks in?
Well, I'm thinking next offseason is when it should kick in. I mean, baseball is not exactly known for its logic.
Okay, we also heard a lot of speculation about the 26th man on the roster would be a factor, and that seems to have gone out the window.
Yeah, completely. That was like, oh yeah, this one's definitely happening. We know that for sure. Yeah, not happening. No changes to the rosters before or after September 1st.
25 and 40, folks. Hope you're okay with that because you're stuck with it for 5 more years.
Yeah. And the other interesting thing was that this, you know, the big push for this international draft, which we, you know, when we were talking to Shai, that was apparently taken off the table. But now it seems like as though there might be just hard slot or bonus caps for teams of 5 to 6 million, which, I mean, that doesn't seem like it helps the amateurs much.
No. Weird. They always seem to deke when they actually get the CBA signed, where you think you're going one way and there's something you're like, that doesn't even make sense. I'm sure there'll be a lot more details, but that's what we've got right now. Anything else that we know?
No, I think that's it. I mean, this stuff will come out as the actually gets ratified, but the good news is that everything is going to continue and the offseason can finally start moving.
And there's a lot of money to throw around in any offseason. And this one, it might be, as our guest predicted, kind of like the dam breaking now. So now that we're talking about all these things that might happen, maybe we have some questions in regards to things that might happen. Shall we begin?
Go for it.
If you only had $25 million left to spend this offseason, would you sign one star or would you spread it around and try and fill more holes? Josh. That's from
Matt Sweeby. Sweeby.
Yeah.
Yes. At Blue Jay Matt. Now, I don't think it's only $25 million. I think it should be, based on Shai's numbers, at least, it would be closer to $35 to $40 million. But in that hypothetical, you have to spread it around. This team isn't good enough for just one more star to take them over the top.
And I concur. We have a bullpen that didn't look great to start last season and didn't magically get better over the season with the loss of Cecil and some other things going on. So, yeah, I'm not thinking. I don't think there's one position where you've just got one hole. Much less to say the, you know, corner outfield spots.
And first base, because Justin Smoke is not good.
Come on. So should the hashtag for that be never smoke or no smoking?
Like smoking which, kills?
Yeah, it could be. Maybe. So, yeah, let us know, folks, if you're interested in having a hashtag.
Smoke-related, a smoke badness-related hashtag.
Yeah, and of course you put the A in smoking, regardless of where you get it there. There's got to be a proper one.
I have my little photo that I like to tweet out when he does stuff. It's from Calvin Hobbs. He's saying smock. Hobbs saying smock over and over, and Calvin says, what the hell is wrong with you? By just changing the C to an A? It fits so perfectly. Smoke, smoke, smoke. What the hell is wrong with you?
I just, I usually end up tweeting my gif of Kermit drawing the K on the screen in Sesame Street. So, give me a question.
All right. So, this one is another little more theoretical one. Well, I guess it's not so theoretical, but why isn't Dalton Pompey getting more consideration for a full-time outfield spot? This is from Quinn.
I think he did not prove in AAA that he was ready for a full-time outfield spot. I don't know defensively, because you don't really get... Like, I mean, I never heard anything fantastic defensively about him. They moved him to a corner, which is never a good sign when you're in AAA. And he didn't hit really well in Buffalo last year, despite everything. Is that about covering?
I think it does. He couldn't stay healthy either. Throw that one in there.
Oh, yeah. See, I missed the...
The corner thing, I think, was just to see if he would be able to help the major league team because they had their outfield difficulties, as you may remember. But yeah, I mean, he's just hasn't earned it yet.
Mm-hmm. We have a question from James Gorman, Jimmy double _ Gorman. You will speculate anyway on this, but I'd love some speculation about the kind of package it would take to get Kutch and how would he fit.
There's actually another question that goes with that one. Think a package of Green, Biagini, and a low-level prospect will get it done. There's nothing written with that, but it has to be Andrew McCutchen because that's what everyone was talking about before we recorded this.
See,
it's hard to say. I mean, there's a writer for FanRag Sports who sort of posited this around. He's very plugged in with them. It's John Perotto with the Pirates. Mm-hmm. And he suggested Biagini, Roddy Tellez, and DJ Davis. Now, DJ Davis is not really a prospect anymore, so I don't know why he was included. But the general consensus was that because the Pirates are shopping McCutchen as opposed to just saying, hey, he's maybe available, that it won't cost all that much.
Although, in some circles, you know, at the high side of the minors, Roddy Tellez is a big piece for the Jays because, although he may have flaws, do we have another power hitter in the system?
Yeah, Vlad Jr. Tellez is a good prospect, and you don't want to give him up. But I mean, you're not giving up, he's a prospect, right? A double A prospect, and if you can get Andrew McCutchen,
yep,
it's worth it.
You put Kutch. Where do you put Kutch? Do you let him play right?
Right or left? Which I mean, doesn't really matter. I don't think. Probably right field. He's got a decent arm. But I mean, he's not taking Kevin Pillar's spot in center because he's not actually that good a center fielder.
Did you ever think you would say that sentence? By the way, he's not about anybody. He's not taking Kevin Pillar's spot in center. Just saying.
Well, okay, I'll put Crawler to that. If the Jays got two more outfielders, he's taking Kevin Pillar's spot in center.
There's an interesting question from BK at Brendan Kuhn. Who do you think provides more FWAR, wins above replacement, in the next three seasons, Dexter Fowler or Edwin Encarnacion?
I actually think that this entirely depends on who signs them. Because if Edwin is going to Houston to play first base and Fowler goes to, say, the Blue Jays to play left field, I think it's Edwin. Because he's just so much better a hitter, and then Fowler loses all those center field bonuses.
Yeah. But on the flip side, If Edwin ends up as a DH, it's Fowler all the way.
Well, it's not all the way. I mean, Edwin helped produce him 2 years ago, but it's Fowler's definitely got the leg up.
Well,
because Edwin's just Edwin's a much better hitter.
But Fowler's younger, so you don't. I don't know if you know when Edwin's skill set starts to erode. My money's on Fowler. So we'll agree to disagree for once.
No, I think that it's Fowler if he's in center field, probably, but I wouldn't say it's all the way like you did.
All right. What do we got next?
Okay, so this comes from Ankur Bodelia, the real Ankur. Starting rotation is pretty much set, but who are the Blue Jays 6, 7, 8 options in case of injury rest? Because I mean, he doesn't write this, but the Jays were ridiculously healthy last year, and that's not likely to repeat.
So we talked about number 6 being Joe Biagini. Did we roll that out there?
I think that's right. I think it is Biagini, but I mean, I guess number 7 would be... Who knows?
Roberto Osuna.
You know, the Jays don't have a lot of depth in the starting rotation, and then I think this is something they're definitely going to address, don't you?
Oh yeah, yeah. I think, well, after that we have 5 blanks in AAA, and then they signed a LeBlanc last year. I think, and then that gentleman went on to start for the Mariners, didn't he?
Then he got cut from them too.
Yeah, but there is always the opportunity to find a guy who's good enough to be number 5 for a few turns, and that's who your number 8 guy I think is going to be. But certainly the Jays are going to actively look for something to fill out the Buffalo starting rotation that can be called up in a pinch. But I don't think number 8 is in the organization right now.
Yeah, I mean, and they have Bolsinger, who would be, I guess, number 7, but he's out of options, so he probably opens the season in the bullpen.
And you wait to see if you need to stretch him out or not. Hopefully not. But yeah.
Yeah.
Health, man.
It's... Yep.
From Gabriel Gutierrez at Rock Bard, not Rock Band. What do you think of trading Pilar for Duda? If the Blue Jays sign Fowler, the first base hole is covered with a good bat. I'm sorry. Where is Duda these days? Just so I have
Mets.
A context. He is still with the Mets.
Yep.
Aren't the Mets trying to get rid of an outfielder?
He's a first baseman.
Right, but
that was the point.
But he's saying trade Pilar for Duda, so they're going to get Pilar.
Yeah. Okay, well, I wouldn't do that even if they were willing. And yeah, you're right. It doesn't make any sense for them to take Kevin Pilar. But Duda sucks. He's a non-tender candidate.
Question answered. Okay. We had one here that I'm not able to answer because I... don't pay any attention to bullpen holes. The Charles A at 11cash77. Since we have holes to fill, who are your bullpen targets? Josh, have you written that article yet?
I actually have.
See, I knew it. I knew it.
Well, I mean, the Cecil loss sort of the immediate need is for a left-handed reliever, right?
We only went one whole season without a good left-handed reliever. It didn't seem to.
Yeah, we didn't complain about that at all during the season, right? But yeah, so there's guys like Jerry Blevins, Mike Dunn, but these guys are going to be expensive too. So, I mean, I don't really know what they're going to do. Like Neftali Feliz as a righty would make a lot of sense because he sort of found his fastball again at the end of the year, but his overall season numbers don't look that good. So he might come cheap. Brad Ziegler. I don't know. I'm just throwing out names that are good. Like, but just, I have no idea what they're going to cost or what the Jays are going to spend on relievers.
All right.
I expect we're going to see a lot of Danny Barnes and the like.
Yeah. Yeah. And it turns out they're still not going to be very good. Do you want to finish with Ben Tusum's question there?
Sure.
At Ben Tusum, I've heard the Astros might be willing to trade young talent for stud pitcher Sanchez for Springer. I'm assuming he's doing that straight up because when we speculate about like 15 guys in a trade, it doesn't make any sense and you can't sort it out. So Sanchez straight for Springer.
Yeah, and he says, sorry, just jonesing for Jay's activity and thinking crazy crap
up.
Yeah. But, well, this is kind of what I was talking about earlier, though, with the Astros' apparent plan to acquire all these bats and then trade them, the young hitters, for pitching. Now, I think that the Astros would probably do that trade. I don't think the Blue Jays would.
No, I think the Blue Jays put too much value. Now, would you do Stroman for Springer straight up if you're the Blue Jays?
Ooh. that would be an interesting one.
Made you think.
Yeah. I mean, that's the kind of change trade that you're kind of they're really talking about. I mean, that's an elite outfielder who's not a very good one and a very good pitcher, but neither of them are like the elite of the elite. So that would be a fun one. I don't know where that would go.
All right. Well, so, we'll leave you with that for your crazy stuff.
Yeah, you can good old off-season speculation. I mean, there's nothing going on.
And we've still talked for the better part of an hour about it. Is that amazing or what?
I think it says a lot about our ability to just to talk garbage.
Yeah. Think about this, though. If we were on actual sports radio, we'd have to do it for 3 hours a day, every day of the week. And next time you don't feel bad for Bob McCown, think about that. I still don't feel bad for Damian Cox, though. Okay. So do you have a final thought, my friend?
I do. This is just a little fun thing. We had Josh Kuznick on the pod a couple podcasts ago, and he just tweeted out, "Oh, thank God." As you remember, he was a little worried about how the tender deadline is tomorrow, the day after the CBA expired, and no one would tell him what was going to happen.
To all of his clients who didn't have any contracts, didn't know what to...
And he was saying, like, this big thing he was doing is working on Jeremy Jeffress' arbitration case. It's like, well, now what? So you can rest easy, Josh. Your guy's cleared.
I get the real sense that no one gave him a good answer to that question.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hope it picks up in the next couple weeks before we come back, because my timeline doesn't even have any baseball on it on Twitter, and that's all I follow is baseball people. I'm dying here, folks. So my final thought is, someone, please do something in the free agent market so we have something to talk about. And congratulations to Eric Thames. Welcome back to the major leagues. He is a Brewer for 3 years.
Oh yeah. 3 year deal for Eric Thames. Who saw that coming?
Nobody.
3 years for Eric Thames, only 4 years for Yoenis Cespedes.
The dollar figures might be slightly different.
Nah. So hey. I'm going to predict that we're actually going to be back next week because the Jays will do stuff at the winter meetings.
Oh, my goodness. Well, on that note, I have been Greg Wisniewski at Coolhead 2010. You have been Josh Howsam at Joshua Howsam. Our guest was Shai Davidi at Shai Davidi. And this was Artificial Turf Wars episode number 38, and we will be back sooner or later, depending on how excited we are.